Welcome to Justice Today, the official podcast of the Department of Justice's Office of Justice Programs, where we shine a light on cutting-edge research and practices and offer an in-depth look at what we're doing to meet the biggest public safety challenges of our time. Join us as we explore how funding, science, and technology help us achieve strong communities.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. I'm Josh Mondoro, your host for today. 8 years ago, the Vera Institute of Justice and the MILPA Collective began a program that tried to change the current prison culture in the U.S. They entered a maximum security prison in Connecticut, known as The Rock, and began working with incarcerated individuals and staff to understand how they could build a better way of life within the prison. This became the first unit in the Restoring Promise program. So what is Restoring Promise? How is it different than a typical U.S. prison experience? And what impact has it made around the country? Here to discuss these questions with me are three guests, Kylie Clark-Mormon, Selma Jokovic, and Josh Summers. Kylie is a social science research analyst at NIJ. Selma is the Associate Director of Research for Restoring Promise with the Vera Institute of Justice, and Josh is a research manager for the MILPA Collective with Restoring Promise. Thank you all for joining me today. And before we get to the first question, there's actually another question that I want to ask you all. When I was looking through over our content, looking over what we're going to talk about, I realized I never asked you how you got involved in this research. So Kylie, I want to start with you.
Criminal justice research, I owe all to Christopher Maloney, who was the star of both Oz and SVU, Law and Order, that I, both of which I probably watched at way too young of an age, and got me really thinking about the prison system and our United States. So that's the real origins. But as far as Restoring Promise, I came on to NIJ and they were already doing this great work. And I saw, you know, I was keyed into the work outside of NIJ and then coming here, just really excited that it's kind of continuing.
Selma, how about you?
I got into the social justice space in college, actually. So I went to John Jay College of Criminal Justice. I was taking a gender studies class. It's kind of like where it really first started. And after that, it was the first gender studies course being taught at John Jay at the time. And so I took that first class. The same professor was teaching a gender and justice class. In the gender and justice class, we talked a lot about intersectionality and how kind of different identities interact with the different institutions and systems across the country. And that really kind of ignited a passion for really social justice generally. And Restoring Promise was, it was in the social justice, criminal justice space, but also they did at the time collaborative research. And that was really important to me to maintain in my career, that all of the research that I was doing was with the people who were most impacted by any research being done and any change being made. So joined Restoring Promise and have been here for 7 years now almost. So
that's awesome. That's a great journey. Josh, how about you?
Yeah, no, so I was incarcerated, and then I came home after being incarcerated and didn't really know how to move or what my choices were. I chose to go to school because I felt like I didn't have any other choice because of how hard it is to get jobs being felons now. I didn't know, and so, coming home, it was almost like you didn't want people to know that you were incarcerated, you know, like it was almost like a shame, you know, or almost like an embarrassment. And then, you know, the Juan Gomez and John Pineda, the directors of MILPA, you know, approached me and came over to me and they taught me how to use it as a tool, you know, to wear it, you know. So, you know, even when I'm introducing myself, you know, my name is Joshua Summers, a formerly incarcerated system impacted, and being okay with that, you know. And they brought me in, they brought me closer, and they says, look, there's a project that we're working on. There's an initiative called Restore and Promise. We would like to bring you over here. And this is an opportunity where we center that leadership of formerly incarcerated. You know, it's like your lived experience provides more than what some PhDs can, because you've lived it. You know what I mean? You've lived it. You've you've experienced that your voice matters, you know? So it's our way of kind of like disrupting it a little bit about like bringing, allowing ourselves at the table, you know what I mean? So I came over to Restore and Promise, and for, you know, with, alongside others with the similar situations, and I've been part of Restore and Promise now for 4 years this month.
That's awesome. That's a really, really powerful story. Thank you for sharing that. And it's really great to hear about how you all got connected to this. So Kylie, starting with you, broadly speaking, you all, you know, we're here to talk about Restoring Promise and the prison system in the U.S. Broadly speaking, what is the culture and life in a U.S. prison like?
Well, in U.S. prisons, I mean, as well as jails, we see a real culture of control. And so that means that a primary concern for prison administrators, for jail administrators, is physical security. That means that they're really trying to keep people who live there and work there safe. But even with all those kinds of controls and that culture, prison and jail can still be very violent. In these institutions, there's a lot of punitive responses. So going along with keeping physical security, going along with controlling individuals in prison, there's punitive responses to bad behavior that can include things like infractions, right? That can be lockdowns, sometimes of the entire institution, just for maybe a few people's behavior. That can mean sending people to restrictive housing. But when you have
a lot of punishment emphasis.
Yeah. Yes. Big punishment emphasis. Yeah. But within that culture, when you create that culture, it can be difficult because it can create this like adversarial us versus them. Right. And that can be difficult to also create a culture where rehabilitation and reentry is an emphasis. So if you have this adversarial culture, it can be difficult to focus on rehabilitation and reentry. And so that's why we're really excited to talk about these kinds of programs or philosophies that disrupt that status quo, that culture of control, like Restoring Promise, where it's really trying to change the culture by establishing these different types of units that really don't focus on these punitive responses.
Yeah, like you mentioned reentry, like it's hard when you're have an adversarial, like you mentioned, a tense combative situation. It's hard to prepare. It doesn't sound like it's set up to prepare people for, well, what comes next. You know, there are plenty of individuals who are going to hopefully leave, you know, and reenter society, and they're not being prepared for that, it sounds like, in a way.
Yeah, that's such a great point. You know, the majority of people who are in prison are going to come out. They're going to come back into our communities. We also know that prison impacts people of color disproportionately. So, you know, non-white individuals are disproportionately imprisoned compared to white individuals. And again, so, you know, prison, this culture of control and kind of this violence that is seen in prison can really impact people, impact successive reentry. But again, you know, administrators are under a lot of pressure to keep people safe, both living and working in prisons, but also now tasked with rehabilitating and preparing for reentry. So it can be difficult, and it's a lot to consider.
So Kylie has just laid out the kind of the context here. And with that context, we have a system that is very much in need of improvement. Restoring Promise is kind of a way to do that. What was the inspiration for Restoring Promise and the improvement that it sought to bring to the U.S.?
Well, so, you know, a lot of what we see in the prison system today is a direct reflection of this country's long and storied and horrible history with slavery. As we all might know or might not know, America's 13th Amendment in the Constitution abolished slavery except for people who had committed a crime. And I contrast that with the German prison system, where human dignity is enshrined in their constitution. So their first amendment, I believe, is that reads, and I'm going to read it, human dignity shall be inviolable. To respect and protect it shall be the duty of all state authority. And this is very, very different, right? In stark contrast to the 13th Amendment.
So there's a foundation kind of in law,
yes,
that this is important, which is not the case here.
And that is directly reflected in the way that we treat the people who we incarcerate, right? If you don't believe that people are deserving of human dignity, that they are essentially slaves if they have committed a crime and are incarcerated, then that allows you to treat them in a way that is not conducive to success, right? As Kylie was talking about, it's dehumanizing. It gives you a license to dehumanize. Whereas in Germany, it's literally the opposite. You only have a license to humanize. Right? That is your job as a state authority. And so, like I said, this ethos is really reflected in the way that Germans incarcerate the people who are in their system. And so in 2015, Vera organized a trip for a group of folks that included some corrections officials to go and see the system firsthand. How is this translating, this human dignity principle translating to the way that people are incarcerated. And the group visited a number of prisons throughout the country. And I asked, you know, our initiative director, Ryan Shanahan, was on this trip. I was not, but I did get the opportunity in 2018 to go to Germany to see their prisons. But I asked Ryan, you know, what were people most struck by on this trip? And she said that, you know, no matter the location, you know, in Germany, there are newly built modern prisons that are honest, frankly, like beautiful, right? And modern and architecturally really, really well done. And then there are older structures, right, that more closely resemble American prisons. But regardless of the environment, there was a consistency in the culture, in the way that people interacted with one another, in the way that human dignity was showing up. There's an emphasis in Germany on normalization, making sure that life on the inside reflects as closely as possible life on the outside. And so this looks like staff and incarcerated people wearing their own clothes, them having a camaraderie. Incarcerated people have access to kitchens to cook their own food. They can open and close their own windows. These things sound so, I don't know, silly or inconsequential, right? But when you've been to an American prison, those things are like, you know, so jarring.
Even in media too, like in the US, exactly. You don't see that represent, like there's always the iron bars. There's all like, there's very much, you don't have a lot of privacy or agency.
Exactly. And there's people are moving freely throughout facilities in these newer, more modern buildings. A lot of the rooms that I saw, folks had a separate entrance to a bathroom, right? A bathroom with a door, kind of like an ensuite, right, in a master bedroom or something like that. And then even in the older facilities where, you know, they didn't have that built into the architecture of those buildings, having a separate bathroom in the room, they put a little curtain around the toilet that sits in the cell because, you know, just to like respect that dignity, that like a toilet shouldn't just be like out in the open where you sleep and where you, you know, spend your days. And so like these little things were really, you know, a reflection of the way that the Germans uphold human dignity in kind of the day to day and in their operations. And one of the people who was on this trip, because you asked me about the kind of origin story of Restoring Promise, was Scott Semple, who was the commissioner of the Connecticut prison at the time. And when he came back from the trip and Vera came back from the trip, we were internally exploring how we could apply what we learned in Germany to young adults in the adult system here. And at the same time, Connecticut was thinking about what they themselves could apply to their own system and to young adults specifically, because they visited a juvenile facility in Germany. And in Germany, it's so rare that they incarcerate anybody under the age of 18. So their juvenile system is from 18 to 21 years old. And you can be incarcerated in one of those prisons up to 25, depending on the length of your sentence. And so Scott Semple really wanted to do something with young adults. And it all came together in 2016. And that's when we partnered with them to open the first Restoring Promise unit, which was the TRUE unit in Connecticut. And that opened in January 2017.
Kylie had mentioned that in the U.S. there's a heavy emphasis on control and especially like physical safety and an emphasis on that. What was, you mentioned you visited Germany. What did you see anything similar over there, or did they do things? It sounds like they did it differently over in Germany.
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of the things that struck me also when I went to Germany is that, you know, you can go up to any correctional officer in any facility in Germany and ask them, what is your role? And they would share that it's to serve and protect the incarcerated people, whereas like here in the American system, it's to serve and protect the public from the incarcerated people, even though they're incarcerated, but like, whatever, and to uphold their human dignity. And in Germany, officers go through 2 years of training when they're hired as corrections officials. It's also a highly, highly sought after position in Germany. There are way more applicants than there are positions, which is in you know, very stark contrast, unfortunately, especially, you know, today to the staffing shortages that we're seeing across this country. And what they learn in this training is things like psychology, law, young adult development, different courses on like criminology, effective communication, active listening, therapy, right? Like they're going through this like really crazy training. And then their role is really to be kind of a counselor, mentor to the incarcerated people there. And so what you end up seeing is that us versus them, that adversarial culture that exists in the U.S. prisons does not exist in Germany, right? Staff and incarcerated people are working in step together to get the incarcerated person prepared to go home, because in Germany too, most people are going home. And we want to, and Germany says, we want to make sure that the people who are going back are good citizens to their neighbors, right? And so they really focus on rehabilitation. Daily schedules are packed with different activities for folks to do that is really intensely focused on getting them home and getting them home and successfully and staying home, right? That's also really important. And so for Restoring Promise, we really wanted to bring those core elements back. And what we noticed in Germany and what everybody saw in Germany is that staff are really critical to success of any of these efforts. They set the tone off the rip. And I think, you know, staff are dehumanized by the system too. It's not just incarcerated people who are negatively impacted by the way that the prison system in this country works. And so it was really important for us to communicate to staff that this was also about them and their dignity and uplifting their dignity and giving them, you know, a greater purpose than just custody and control. And I think, you know, that's been a big part of it. And so we noticed that the training was really crucial in Germany. And so we couldn't, you know, do a 2-year training. I don't think any director of corrections could really take their staff out to do a 2-year training. But what we were able to do was a 3-week intensive training for all staff who work on Restoring Promise units. And that has similar kind of topics like young adult development, restorative justice, active listening, effective communication, the history of the prison system, things like that, that staff are learning.
I think it's kind of hard for an American audience to imagine, honestly, because, you know, like in media representations of prison culture, if nothing else, you know, a lot of Americans have been exposed to that, right? And the image there is like, there's a fight, right? There's always a fight. And it's often between correct, like the staff and, you know, the incarcerated individuals. In Germany, like hypothetically, if there was, you know, a confrontation, altercation, like how would they handle something like that?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because one of the corrections officials on the trip actually asked a German official who was leading the tour, like, what or actually as a corrections officer who was part of the tour group but worked in Germany, like, what do you do if somebody spits on you? And that corrections officer from Germany, like, just looked really puzzled and was like, I would ask them, why did you spit on me? Whereas, as you can imagine, as Kylie was sharing earlier, you know, what a response in a dehumanizing custody and control, a system hyper-focused on custody and control, what the response would be to somebody spitting
immediate on punishment,
you, right? Yes, immediate punishment, retribution, putting them in solitary confinement, taking away their phone calls, visits for, you know, 30, 60, 90 days. You know, these are practices that are commonly used in the prison system today whenever something occurs. And, you know, it's a vicious cycle. That German official was puzzled by the question because he's like, that doesn't happen here. But why doesn't it happen there? Because it's not a system that is, you know, treating people in this critically dehumanizing way and then expecting them to fall in line, right? When oftentimes we hear on the research end, when we ask folks in interviews or in open-ended questions on the survey, like, what is it that contributes to a safe environment, or what is it that, you know, makes restoring promise? And oftentimes it's really just that very foundational aspect of being treated like a human. We aren't treated like animals. We aren't, you know, and that's, it's such an easy thing to do. I mean, it sounds easier, I think, than it probably is in practice, especially when you consider a long history of practices over the years of dehumanizing people and trying to disrupt that. But that's really all it is.
Yeah. And you make a good point. It does sound simple, and in some ways it's kind of encouraging almost, like, mm-hmm. It really becomes, if we get down to the kind of basics of what is one system built on versus what is another system built on, how can we then try and bring that culture and that the basics or the foundation of that system over to this system? That's where obviously it gets a little more complicated, but that's where restoring promise can step in. Someone mentioned a couple of key things. One, you mentioned there's like an age range, kind of 18 to 25 year old. So focused on young adults kind of over in Connecticut, that was the emphasis that they wanted that to target that specific demographic. And you also mentioned that staff are working on these units. So Josh, I wanted to ask you what, you know, who is, you know, living on these units and then also working with these units, and how is that kind of set up?
Yeah, of course. So as you heard, about 18 to 25 year olds, young adults live on the unit. But first, we're asking about 15, 16 mentors to live on the unit first. And though the mentors are people who have lengthier stays, even doing life, we're actually asking them, would you be interested? Would you come over here? They might be living there 10 years for all we know where they currently are. So we're asking them to give up where they're living now to try to go over to this unit to work with these young adults. So as restoring promise, we call the mentor, that kind of the backbone of this initiative. We call on the backbone of the initiative simply because what we're asking them to do. You know, we're asking them to give up where they're living, currently living, where they could have been for a long time, you know, made their home, to go work with this, to work in a restoring promise unit, to go live in a restoring promise unit, to work with these young adults, which we have about, some could have up to 50 or 60 young adults in there. And we'll move these young adults in there in cohorts, groups at a time, to kind of, you know, get used to it, you know, or, you know, kind of feel around for it. Because we also don't want the mentors to be overwhelmed, just kind of, you know, go, you know, we'll you know, try to take care of them in that way as well. So the mentors and the mentees live, and then we also have a selected staff that, you know, and keep in mind, all these, there's that application process. Everybody's applied to be on this Restoring Promise unit. So we even have selected staff that apply to work on Restoring Promise unit, as well as counseling staff, as well, you know, unit managers. You know, they don't live on there, obviously, but they're kind of, they spend, their job is to work the Restore and Promise unit. The young adults, or no, the mentors and the staff are trained alongside each other to share that same values of restorative justice, race equity, cultural healing, and family engagement. And at first, because of the stigma of prison, I've witnessed where staff weren't comfortable sitting next to the same table with lifers that were doing time, or mentors and stuff like that. But by the end of our training, I also witnessed handshaking, hugs. So yeah, that's kind of how who lives on the Storm Promise unit.
You mentioned applications. There is a certain level of people need to be willing to buy in up front, right? Like you're not just, it's not open to anyone. Do all incarcerated individuals, mentors, and staff all have to apply?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's amazing that like there's...
I mean, think about it though. Like who wouldn't want to, when they hear what we're coming to do, when they've heard the story of Restoring Promise, when they hear, and we never have short of applications. You know, I mean, when it comes to staff, man, it's a little, like I said, staff shortage is a big thing across the United States. We know that. But as far as like mentors and mentees, you know, that's everybody wants a little bit of Restoring Promise.
That's a great testament to the work that you're doing that, you know, because you described how they're, you know, maybe initially you've seen staff don't want to sit next to incarcerated individuals at the beginning, right? But now, like, you have more applications than you can accept. So that's a great testament to your work. So can you describe kind of what life is like on these units that's so attractive to everyone?
Well, first off, you've heard everybody kind of talk about, like, the renovations, the transformation of a unit, you know? So what that looks like, more shelving in their cells, you know, kitchens to cook their own food, you know? I would tell you, before I've witnessed, you know, risking disciplinary action to get a more comfortable mattress, you know, so just for being able to provide more comfort, I mean, a shelf in your cell in order to put your hygiene on, it sounds silly, but it's a big deal. You know, so the renovations are the first off, and there's a big sense of community, you know, what we're doing is we're providing a safe place. We're providing a unit where people can all come in. It's their own community. This is like, for example, when the Restoring Promise open up, they actually create their own community or village agreements. You know, so
really,
yeah, such as treat each other with respect. You know, hold each other accountable. You know, lift each other up. You know, call each other in versus call each other out. Just a bunch of a respect. So it. When these young adults are coming in, and this is created by the mentors and the staff, you know, so they were working together to create this community. So as these young adults are coming in, it's almost like, if you guys want to come here, these are our agreements. Are you okay with following these? Yes, we are. Okay. You know, so keep in mind, you know, this is not an incentive unit. If it was our way, everybody deserves, every unit would be a Restoring Promise unit. Everybody deserves human dignity. You know, so the gap, you know, we've shortened that gap of that us versus them. You have what we want, well, us versus them being staff and incarcerated people. You have them now, you know, like I said, sitting in circle with them. What that means is like every morning, the mentors and the staff and all the mentees, they sit in a circle and they do a check-in. You know what I mean? They do like, how are you feeling on a scale of 1 to 10? Right? Everybody might say an 8, a 9, you know, everybody's feeling good. They want to give, you know, they want to get back to what they're doing. There might be one or two that says, I'm actually feeling a 3. Okay. So that lets everybody know, okay, how can we wrap around them? How can we lift them up? You know, how can we, you know, staff included, you know, and maybe something along the lines of you had a rough conversation with a family member, or, you know, how, so it's opportunities to like identify how we can support each other, You know, so but then when they circle around the next day or later on that day, and that number might have went up just because of the sense of community. You know, someone might have came and talked to you, you know, or pulled you aside and said, "Hey, are you doing okay?" Because it's important when, you know, in Restoring Promise, when we say like, "Hey, how are you doing? Are you doing okay?" Like, we mean it. You know, and we want to know. You know, we're not just here. You know. So that's one of the ways that we close that us versus them. You know, there's more freedom of movement. Ultimately, it's like we're trying to create such an impact on these young individuals so they can go home and create such an impact on their community. It's like a way of ending mass incarceration. Like someone said, like, hopefully they stay home, because I guarantee you, or most likely, I should say, that these young adults have experienced so much trauma before incarceration that led to incarceration. And who are we to be like, you can't heal trauma with trauma, right? You can't heal trauma with trauma, you know? So that's one of the things that we, you know, how we create that safe place. Prison is a stigma of like, I got to stand on my guard, especially when you're young, you know, coming from wherever you come from. I got to stand on my guard all the time, right? So if you can create a space that lowers that guard and where someone can open up with expression, you know, like, I'm not okay. And then the staff and the mentors and come to them and says, you know, it's okay to not be okay. You know, it's okay. It's okay to tear up when you're in circle. It's okay to, like, you know what, express yourself, you know, and know that you have a strong community behind you that's going to support you, you know. And that's all we're doing. We're creating a community, you know. We're supporting them and creating their own community. The staff, the mentors, and then the mentees, you know.
That's kind of a key element that you brought up a few times, that it's theirs, that they have ownership over it. And you kind of describe some ways that they do that, like circle. And, you know, when you don't even have to have small changes like that, you know, that can kind of fuel that ownership and that bond. Is there a tough transition for some of them going from what the regular expected maybe system is like, life is like, to, oh, we're now trying to build a culture, build a community and take ownership of that? Is there ever any friction or difficulty? Or do you tend to see people really buy in and get behind that goal?
When it comes to tough transition, when it comes to like mentors or mentees, like, I don't think so. No, I don't see it. You know, I don't see a tough one, because what you're currently in is you're in a warehouse that's warehousing humans. You know, so the opportunities like these come to do these different things. Like, we get the buy-in. There's other programs too. Other kind of work. You know, people doing work with young adults. You know, different kinds of programs. But what difference with us is like, we're kind of transforming the way it's done. Our unit of analysis. Keep in mind that our unit of analysis is not the individuals. It is the culture of the prison. Mm. So what does that even mean? Like, you know, like, for example, like, one example me and someone like to use is if two kids are fighting over a candy bar, right? Traditionally, they'll instantly get disciplined, rolled up, loss of privileges, loss of all that, right? When we come in, our question is more of like, we're not really kind of interested to why two kids are fighting. We're more interested in why they're fighting over what's going on in the environment, that they're fighting over food. You know, so that's what. So we don't really see too much of the transition. I mean, there's a lot of you're battling mindsets, right? And so there's hesitancies. There's people that think there's still people on there that don't do the crime if you can't do the time, or there's places. That's what it is, you know. So like but with Restoring Promise, we have seen the transformation of the minds. People that were, no, this is never going to work. We shouldn't even be doing this. To bought in. And now going around talking about, presenting about the impact of Restoring Promise in their own state.
That's amazing. When you described the, you know, that kind of culture of ownership and changing that culture, Are there, you described some of the habits, you mentioned like the circle and checking in and kind of that being one of the elements. Are there other either habits or, you know, other aspects of the program that kind of help build, not only, I guess, build that culture and that community, but also, you know, Selma and Kylie both mentioned trying to prepare young adults for, you know, when we're re-entering society, right? Are there other either classes or things in the program that focus specifically on that too?
Yeah, well, so there's, well, the good thing is when you open up a community like that where people are over, there's a lot of talent in prison, you know? So when you open up, when you build a community where people are allowed to express through their own talent, their art on the walls, you know, just having color on the walls does something to your mental health, you know? Just breathing fresh air does something to your mental health. So, you know, I'll give an example. One of our units in Colorado, there was one mentee on the unit. He didn't speak English, only Spanish. So without the help of anybody else, nobody outside of Restoring Promise, the Restoring Promise Village, you know, the mentors, the staff on the unit staff, the unit managers, instead of teaching the young man English, they created their own class to teach everybody Spanish. You know, so that was just one. And that's, so what I bring that up because, like, keep in mind, this is prison. Keep in mind that, like, we didn't have to do anything for them to do it. They came up with that idea themselves. So when you ask yourselves, like, why did you do that? Well, or what made you think of that? Well, some sort of guards have been coming down. Some people, there's been some sort of transformation of people, of bonds with each other, that they're able to, that they cared about each other enough to do that. And they had, I was there to visit, and they had every single person participating, raising their hands and building. So we just, by changing the environment where, I mean, these people are creating. So we're not doing any classes. They're creating their own classes. Another example I could give you too is in North Dakota, where the unit manager, when I visit them, they would come and visit, or I go visit North Dakota, and they would come tell me on their own the fact that one mentee wrote an apology letter to another mentee without being told to do that, just from what he's learned by being in this environment. You know, so those are just some of the ones I wanted to make sure I highlighted. But at the same time, just all the other things that we do too, they create their own family days, they celebrations. If somebody got their GED, that unit's gonna celebrate with each other. They're gonna empower them. Like, congratulations, man! You know, you did it. You know, they're gonna celebrate all kind of, you know, achievements, Father's Days for the fathers in there. You know, so they build this amongst themselves.
It sounds like one of the effects of that trust and that community is creativity and like expression. You mentioned art. You mentioned, you know, teaching different languages and things like that. And that's really, it's really incredible to hear about that and those examples and just how the mindset is shifting on those units. You mentioned a couple of locations. You mentioned Colorado and North Dakota. Selma, where is Restoring Promise around the country in addition to those locations? And what are some of the results from those locations?
So Restoring Promise currently has two units in Connecticut, one in the very first unit that I mentioned earlier, which is the TRU unit. That's in a maximum security men's prison. We have a women's unit, the only women's unit for Restoring Promise so far in Connecticut as well, at their only women's facility there. We worked with Middlesex County Jail in Massachusetts to help them open up a unit, the PACT unit. We have two units in men's prisons in South Carolina, one unit in a men's prison in North Dakota, one in a men's prison in Colorado, and we're in the process of opening a unit in a men's prison in Idaho. And we just completed with NIJ funding, well, not just, but a little bit ago, completed a randomized control trial, which was our first, you know, real evaluation of the impact of Restoring Promise. For that particular study, we were interested in whether or not Restoring Promise had an impact in reducing violence amongst young adults, and found that it did, in fact, have a significant impact on reducing violence. So young adults who lived on Restoring Promise units were less likely to commit violent infractions than young adults who lived in the general population in the control group. And generally, overall, we also have, you know, do research with each unit whenever we open it. We do process evaluations to really understand how the unit's developing, you know, short-term outcomes of living on the unit and working on the unit for staff and incarcerated folks. And across the board, you know, people feel invested in, they feel safe. That's a really, really important point. You know, Kylie spoke earlier about there being a real focus in this country on security, but security does not always equal safety, right? You can be in a place that is, you know, has barbed wire all over the place, the door locks behind you as soon as you change rooms, and you can feel insanely unsafe, right? And so people feel safe, both staff and incarcerated people. They feel like they have a greater sense of purpose, both of them. Young adults feel like they have a space where they can express themselves, where they can show up as individuals, where they don't have to constantly be on alert all the time. Staff have said that working on the unit has improved their quality of life, has improved their relationships with their own families when they go home. But staff do talk about it being a different kind of stress, right? Staff are like, now I have to, like, you know, be a counselor to young adults, and that, you know, can be taxing, but it's a stress that's worth it, right? That's what we hear all the time. It's worth it. It feels like at the end of the day, something positive is being done. And so across the board, you know, it's been difficult. It's been challenging work. It's, you know, and it's a challenge to maintain that and sustain it. But, you know, the True Unit has been open for over seven years now, and it's still going strong. And they themselves opened up a second unit right next door without.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, we knew about it, but they were like, we got this. The mentors and the staff just, you know, came together and the administrators, and they opened a unit right next door, which is really a unit that's meant to prepare folks. It's kind of like a step down. Once folks have a certain amount of time left on their sentence, they'll go and live on that unit and have, like, really dedicated programming and activities for reentry. But, you know, it's going strong, and we're really, really happy with what we're finding so far.
You mentioned next door. When you say that, is that a, like, it's literally next door to the other unit, or is it in another facility?
Oh, no, next door to the other unit in the same facility.
Okay.
And so, you know, I mentioned a bunch of different states, and Restoring Promise works in places that are geographically diverse, in places with different challenges and opportunities, places with, like, different political landscapes. And what we're finding is that, you know, across the board, regardless of these kind of differences in these diverse environments, we're seeing a positive impact everywhere.
That's amazing. It reminds me of a question I forgot to ask Josh. So you have the mentors and the individuals who are on the Restoring Promise unit. They're still interacting with people who are not living on that unit, at least at certain times of the day, right? What is that like? And is there any, you know, do you notice the culture that they have kind of at all affecting or being affected by maybe the culture that's not on their unit?
From the responses that I've gotten, you know, it's more of like, tell me what I got to do to get on the unit. Put a good word for me to get on the unit, you know? How do I get on the unit? You know, put a good word in for me. So nothing bad, I don't think, when it comes to mentees or mentors, you know, there might be a little... I don't want to say, like, jealousy in a way, you know, but there could be just, like, I applied and didn't get in. But it's nothing against the program. It's more like, dang, you know, maybe next time, you know, because there's.
So overall, more of a positive effect. Like you.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And I can jump in just to add a quick note. One of the things that is challenging about, you know, this work, and, you know, we've been talking about all the positives of it, and it is positive and definitely the direction that American correction should go in. But one of the things that we're, you know, that is a challenge is that the unit operates in a larger facility, in a larger system that isn't changing at that rate and isn't kind of hasn't yet adopted this culture on a wholesale level. And so it's hard for staff really to navigate that sometimes, right?
Kylie, someone just mentioned that we're trying to expand, right, this work. And there are a lot of lessons that they've learned from the Restoring Promise approach. So are there other ways that this research and these lessons are being applied kind of in other areas that NIJ is working on?
Yeah. So Restoring Promise is definitely, as we have alluded to, a unique initiative. So we're really happy to kind of uplift and support it as we already have. Recently, our sister agency, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, also announced a $1.5 million award to VERA to expand Restoring Promise through a new initiative that's called Designed for Dignity. And that will actually involve selecting 8 agencies to use this framework. And the goal is to transform culture. So we're really excited to talk about that. And that BJA has also recognized the importance of this initiative. And then for NIJ specifically, we've rated Restoring Promise as promising on our clearinghouse of policies and programs. That's at crimesolutions.gov. And we encourage policymakers, administrators, practitioners to go onto that website and access more information about Restoring Promise and see kind of if they're interested in doing similar things at their institutions. And then we also, NIJ is also funding a similar but different project called, a similar but different project that also follows a European model. So we are funding research into the Kewaunee Life Skills Reentry Center, which is a facility in Illinois. That again is focused on this European model. So it's a center that is preparing individuals for reentry in a pretty intensive way. They have heavy investments in education, heavy investments in other reentry programming. And so again, a little bit similar, a little bit different because it is a standalone facility, but we're really excited to see the results from that, which obviously research takes time. So it's going to take a couple years before we see those results. So we also introduced a new solicitation last year, and it was called the Research and Evaluation on Correctional Culture and Climate Solicitation. And that was alongside our sister agency, the Bureau of Justice Assistance. And now this solicitation was able to fund research that really builds on the foundation that we talked about today that was laid by Restoring Promise. So under that solicitation, we provided almost $3.6 million in funds to 4 different projects that all focused on improving correctional culture and climate in various correctional environments. So one award was made to Suffolk University, and they're going to work with the Massachusetts Department of Corrections to address occupational policies and procedures in an effort to ultimately improve officer health as well as wellness. Another award was made to RTI International, and they're going to conduct a mixed methods evaluation of cognitive communities in partnership with the Virginia Department of Corrections. These cognitive communities are housing units that use both therapeutic community as well as cognitive behavioral therapy principles to ultimately create healthy pro-social cultures and try to foster personal growth while also creating safe settings for staff and incarcerated individuals. Under the solicitation, we also were able to fund 2 CNA Corporation projects. One of those is evaluating the impact of body-worn cameras on correctional culture and climate. That's in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Corrections. That project involves equipping correctional officers with body-worn cameras and evaluating the impact on culture and climate from both the perspective of staff people at the correctional institutions as well as incarcerated people. And the other CNA award is focused on improving procedural justice in the jail setting. And so with that project, jail officers are going to be trained in procedural justice, and they're going to evaluate the impact of this training on jail climate. These projects did just start in January of this year, so it's going to be some time before we get final results or even interim results, but we're really excited to be starting this important work that's situated within many of the same goals of the Restoring Promise philosophy, namely that improving correctional culture and climate may be able to improve the carceral experience as well as outcomes for those both working and living in correctional institutions. Then beyond our own projects and our own funding, NIJ is also responsible for engaging with the field to improve knowledge as well as understanding. And so in this respect, I also want to point listeners to a recent publication in Corrections Today, and that was authored by our own NIJ director, Dr. Nancy Levine. And that was entitled Transforming Correctional Culture and Climate. That article details various innovations from the field that enhance correctional culture and climate as well. And it also includes more information on Restoring Promise. But as described in that article, NIJ has documented similar efforts elsewhere. Some of those include Little Scandinavia in Chester, Pennsylvania. This unit incorporates Scandinavian prison concepts like single cells, communal kitchens, outdoor green space, and also the Amend unit in Aberdeen, Washington, which is encouraging international exchange and officer training and draws inspiration for potential reforms from Norway. And for people who just want to read more about Restoring Promise, we actually just published another article in the summer issue of Corrections Today that's focused solely on the philosophy. Both of these articles are available both at Corrections Today as well as on the NIJ website if listeners are interested in accessing those. But again, there's definitely institutions across the country that are doing new and exciting things, and we're always happy to talk about things both that we're funding and that we hope to fund in the future.
It's a good excuse for us to talk again about what's coming in a few years and how that's going. One last question for all of you before we go. Kylie, I want to start with you. What is one thing that you want listeners to remember from this conversation?
Yeah, I think that this research shows that changing the status quo is possible, and it can be really difficult and it's probably scary, but you know, we're not seeing increases in violence. We're not seeing increases in misconduct. We're seeing really positive impacts from these units. And I just really encourage listeners to go and learn more.
Selma.
I think the take-home message for me from our conversation today is that when you lead with dignity, everything else falls into place. I think oftentimes we often get asked, what is it? Like, what is the it that, you know, that is a Restoring Promise or that leads to the safety or, you know, that leads to the purpose? And I think really, you know, when we were talking about Germany and the American system, for me, it really just boils down to dignity.
And Josh?
Well, the message I wanted to leave with is more of just like, I want the impact, the dignity, the impact of human dignity to take back to their communities, to their homes, because when they heal, we heal.
That is awesome. Thank you, Kylie, Selma, and Josh for talking about the U.S. prison system with us today and Restoring Promise. I learned a lot. I know our listeners did too. And I hope and encourage everyone who did listen to check out the episode description and learn more. Thank you also, listeners, for tuning in. Please follow us on Spotify, Apple, and stay tuned for more episodes from NIJ.
To learn more about today's topic or about NIJ, visit the links in the episode description and join us for new episodes every month. Opinions or points of view expressed in this episode represent a consensus of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. Any products and manufacturers discussed in this episode are presented for informational purposes only and do not constitute product approval or endorsement by the U.S. Department of Justice.